everyone, and welcome back to Med Talks. Wow, it's been a minute. In fact, it's been several minutes. I'm not even sure why people use that term, it's been a minute. But anyway, it's been a long time. But we're back, and we're ready to start again with the Finals Countdown series, where we are going to be providing lots of useful medical content for all of you clinical year medical students to help you with all of your revision and your upcoming exams. Now, to kick off where we left off, we're still in the gastroenterology series, and in today's talk, we'll be looking at a particular condition called primary biliary cirrhosis, or primary biliary cholangitis, as it's now more commonly known. So, primary biliary cholangitis, or PBC, is an autoimmune condition where the body's immune system starts to attack the liver. And specifically, it involves autoimmune destruction of the small interlobular bile ducts that lie within the liver, and they're called the canals of Herring. Now, damage to these ducts leads to intrahepatic cholestasis. And what does cholestasis mean? Well, it means reduction in the flow of bile secondary to impaired secretion from hepatocytes, so the liver cells, or secondary to obstruction of bile flow through the ducts. Now, intrahepatic cholestasis is actually toxic to hepatocytes, which ultimately leads to scarring, fibrosis, and then ends up with cirrhosis. Now, the reason that the name was changed from biliary cirrhosis to biliary cholangitis is because the cirrhosis is quite a late manifestation of the condition. All right, so why does it occur? Again, it's one of those where there is a combination of potential environmental triggers coupled with genetic predispositions. Now, the environmental triggers are not quite known as of yet. In terms of statistics, well, it's much more common in women, and there's about a tenfold difference. The median age of diagnosis is about 65 years old, and there's increased risk if there is a family history, smoking, or other autoimmune diseases. And there's also an apparent increased risk with increased use of nail polish or hair dye. But don't ask me the pathophysiology behind this. Now let's rewind a second. What actually is the function and importance of bile? So bile is a dark green / yellow / brown fluid, which is synthesized by the liver, and its main function is to aid the digestion of fats or lipids within the small intestine. The bile then gets stored within the gallbladder. So how does it present? Well, it can go through different clinical phases, from preclinical to asymptomatic to symptomatic, and finally to liver insufficiency. So it can be completely asymptomatic and be found incidentally with blood tests. And typically, it will be an isolated elevated alkaline phosphatase, which is an important marker of biliary cholestasis. The most common symptom that occurs in PBC is fatigue, and this is about 50% and is often the presenting symptom. But fatigue is such a non-specific symptom. With just fatigue, patients may be reluctant to seek any medical attention and hope it gets better. Another common feature is pruritus, and this can be severe in about 10%. It's thought to occur because of bile pigment deposition within the skin. Right upper quadrant pain or discomfort may also occur. And later on, patients may exhibit signs such as jaundice, which may present with yellowing of the skin and sclera, pale stools, and dark urine. On examination, patients may have the following signs, so hepatomegaly, hyperpigmentation, splenomegaly, so enlargement of the spleen, and this is especially in the later stages, jaundice in about 40%, xanthelasma, and these are the yellowish white lumps of the fatty deposits that accumulate under the skin of the inner parts of your eyelids, and they contain lipids or fats which include cholesterol. An advanced disease with cirrhosis may present with ascites and the spider nevi. So autoimmune conditions often go together, and PBC is no different. It's commonly associated with Sjögren's syndrome, and patients may also have dry eyes and dry mouth, thyroid disease, systemic sclerosis, celiac disease, and seropositive and seronegative arthritis. Okay, so how is it diagnosed? Well, there are the clinical signs and symptoms that we've just gone through, but often it can be diagnosed incidentally, as I previously alluded to, with an elevated ALP on routine LFTs. So why is it high? Why is the ALP high? Well, primary biliary cholangitis is a cholestatic condition involving biliary obstruction, and this causes your alkaline phosphatase to go up. Elevated bilirubin in advanced disease, and it may be normal initially, and a rising bilirubin shows advancing condition. Prothrombin and albumin are normal until late stage when cirrhosis occurs. Elevated immunoglobulin M, elevated lipid levels and cholesterol. The full blood count is often normal, but there may be a raised ESR, which is often a good marker for chronic autoimmune conditions. And autoantibodies are key for the diagnosis of PBC. The most specific one is the anti-mitochondrial antibody, or AMA, which features in 90 to 95% of cases. And around 35% of PBC patients also have anti-nuclear antibodies, or ANA. So those are the blood tests. It's also useful to do some imaging, such as an ultrasound scan or a CT scan, to exclude other causes of the biliary obstruction, such as gallstones. And a liver biopsy is not routinely required, but if the liver function tests are showing evidence of cholestasis, however the autoantibodies such as AMA or ANA are negative, then it may be needed for diagnosis. And it helps to differentiate between primary biliary cholangitis and autoimmune hepatitis. What will biopsy show? Well, it will show granulomas around the bile ducts and possibly cirrhosis if it's late stage. Okay, now let's go on to talk about the management of this condition. And it's mainly aimed at symptomatic relief and slowing down disease progression. So one of the common features is pruritus, so constant itching caused by the excessive bilirubin level. And the way to treat this is antihistamines. Now also cholestyramine is a bile salt sequestrant. And what this means is that it binds to the bile in the gastrointestinal tract and prevents its reabsorption, therefore reducing the amount of bile acids and bilirubin within the blood. Rifampicin may also help those who do not respond to cholestyramine. And other medications which have been tried are serotonin reuptake inhibitors, and naltrexone has also been tried before. Now, despite the autoimmune process, steroids and azathioprine are not routinely recommended to treat it. The only real cure is a liver transplant, but this is only when liver failure is severe. And again, this can reoccur after the transplant. But as I alluded to earlier, there are some medications that can help to slow progression of the disease. And one that's commonly used is ursodeoxycholic acid, which helps to move bile out of the liver and into the small intestine. And if it's started early enough, then it can cause an improvement in liver function. And it may keep patients from needing or delaying the need for a liver transplant. Patients who have PBC must be taking this medication every day for the rest of their life. It's effective in more than 50% of patients, but unfortunately up to 40% of patients don't achieve an adequate reduction in the alkaline phosphatase or bilirubin with this medication, and 5 to 10% are actually unable to tolerate it. And finally, to conclude this talk, I just want to touch on the complications of PBC and the prognosis for patients who have it. So the main complications are hypothyroidism. So about 20% of patients with PBC actually go on to develop hypothyroidism. The most concerning complication is hepatocellular carcinoma. And this mainly develops in those PBC patients who have got liver cirrhosis and no response or minimal response to the medical treatment such as UDCA can increase the risk. And this is much more common in men than it is in women. Unfortunately, there are no UK guidelines with respect to screening for HCC, but the current best practice is to screen the male PBC patients who have advanced histological changes. And abdominal ultrasound would be the first principal investigation, with also alpha fetoprotein being used. But evidence to support the use of AFP is limited. Another complication is malabsorption of fats. And bile is extremely important in the malabsorption of fats and fat-soluble vitamins, such as A, D, E, and K. And this may lead to steatorrhea and fat-soluble vitamin deficiency, which may mean that patients need to be on vitamin replacements. Another really important complication of PBC is liver cirrhosis, and I will be doing a separate talk on that, so have a listen to that one when it's out. And in terms of prognosis, the good news is that the prognosis of PBC has improved considerably over the recent years because of earlier diagnoses, and also potentially because of the use of UDCA. But as I mentioned before,